All right, welcome back to Vernacular Podcast. We are back on the air after a 9-day hiatus or something, Pete. Anyway,
we're back.
We're ready to go. We're going to talk NFC, AFC South today. Pete is joining me on the horn. He's on the road right now. Where are you right now, Pete? Washington, D.C., our nation's capital.
I am. I tried to get to the Nationals game tonight, and they were rained out, but maybe that was for the best, as the Nationals are now in a full-on fire sale. So we're going to stick to the NFL tonight, so I don't break down in tears.
Yeah.
We might be there with how the national season is going.
We definitely have a few things to talk about with Washington teams tonight. Before that, any celebrity sightings in D.C.?
Not yet, but hey, you know, I don't leave for another 24 hours. If any celebrities are listening, I will be in Baltimore, Washington International Airport pretty soon.
All right, perfect. Okay, so Washington teams. Yeah, you already mentioned the Daniel Murphy trade-ish. I mean, claimed off of waivers by the Cubs. It wasn't clear which team it was. I was listening to Buster Olney earlier today. He was saying maybe it was the Rockies. I think that was his guess, but it turned out to be the Cubs. So Murphy's off to the Cubs. Matt Chapman going to the Cards. And the Nats do indeed seem to be giving up on the season. Is that your impression as well as a Nats fan?
Yeah, very much. I thought it was interesting Matt Adams is going back to the Cardinals. I mean, he was good in the early 2000s for the Cardinals, but he wasn't great.
Thank you for correcting me, by the way. I totally said Matt Chapman. That is the Athletics third baseman and not at all the same player as Matt Adams. So thank you for pointing out that I'm half asleep over here and not doing a good job remembering player names. So Matt Adams traded to the Cardinals.
Yeah, back to the Cardinals, which I think is interesting. I don't know if you saw, but there were reports that Bryce Harper is on the waiver wire and the Dodgers tried to acquire him. They couldn't come to a deal in 48 hours, so he is off the wire back to the Nationals. But very, very interesting that we're looking to move all three of these big boppers. And yeah, the Nationals are well aware that their window is closing. And I mean, they still have 9 games against the Phillies here over the next month and a half. They still have a lot of games against the Mets, a couple against the Braves. I mean, miracles do happen, but it looks like the Nationals are willing to start investing in the farm to make sure they have a team here in the next couple of years instead of trying to win it all this year, right?
Although, as we speak, they're up 1-0 against the Phillies, so anything
can
happen.
I'm looking out the window, though. I tried to go to the game tonight. I'm looking out the window. They're not going to play tonight.
It's pretty stormy out there?
Very much. A lot of lightning, a lot of thunder. I mean, D.C. in August. There's a reason why Congress takes the month of August off, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
So it's not a great night for baseball out here. As much as it hurts my heart as a fan, I think this is the right decision by the Nationals. Not necessarily to get rid of Murphy, but to at least start building for the future. D.D. Martinez has been kind of overwhelmed all year. I think it was pretty unfair, the expectations they put on him. And as much as I want to see him come through, I think he had some learning to do this year. I think he'll be a great manager going forward. The guys love him. But I think it's probably time to start investing a little in the bullpen, get a little money so we can start working again here for the future. And looks like I'll have to find another team to throw my support behind going into September. But I'll still watch my Nationals, but not the result I was hoping for when I got to my phone at 4:00 East Coast time today and half of the team is gone.
Yeah, I know. It was quite surprising to see.
Yeah.
I feel your pain. Much. But as a Washington fan, you're, of course, also a fan of the Deadskins, and there's some Deadskins news as well because Darius Geis, your touted draft pick, who was going to be your starting running back this year, went down with an ACL tear in the first preseason game. And Bruce Allen decides to try to fill the gap with the sort of, you know, washed up all pro with a blown out knee theme here with Jamaal Charles coming in for a workout and then AP coming for a workout. So AP is coming back in the league. He's signed with the Redskins. He had his first practice, I think, today with the team. How are you feeling about the Adrian Peterson signing, Pete?
I mean, it's nice they're making moves, but this is Washington's standard to go after players who were good about 3 or 4 years ago and try to invest too much in them. I don't think Washington has the offensive line to really make this a thing that's going to work. I mean, you look at the success of Chris Thompson last year before he got hurt in mid-November, and he's a guy coming out of the backfield on a check down route, and that's where he's making his money. Is he's fast, he can get out in space and make something happen and hopefully try to blow up probably a man-to-man coverage where a middle linebacker is trying to pick him up. And I mean, I just don't see the workhorse that used to be Adrian Peterson getting tons and tons of carries and just grinding through 16 games is going to happen in Washington based on that offensive line, based on the way the offensive scheme is set. But then again, with Alex Smith, things could change. So I'm interested, but not really compelled by the Redskins right now in terms of this pickup. I like that they're doing something, but they've been known to overpay players who are past their prime. So I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And this is just typical Bruce Allen. I'm really not sure how much longer he can last in DC, especially if this gambit doesn't pay off. I mean, when is enough for Redskins fans? I don't know the answer to that, but it's been a long time since AP was actually good. I'm looking at his stats right now. 2015 was the last time he even got anywhere close to 1,000 yards. He had 1,485 with Minnesota there, his second to last season with Minnesota. And then, of course, he got injured the following season. And then it was, you know, bouncing around Arizona and the Saints last season and compiled just over 500 yards total on almost 160 carries. So not great.
He really hasn't been the same since, what was that, 2014, with the domestic violence issues where the NFL decided to come after him more than anyone else. And obviously domestic violence is not something you or I, or I think any of our listeners, tolerate, but he was really never the same after that. It was interesting that the NFL came after him so hard, but he really has never been the same after those suspensions and that fight with the NFL and the NFLPA taking a stand. And he's definitely past his prime. I mean, he could still give them, we'll call it maybe 400 or 500 yards this year, but I know we're not getting the NFC the NFC East on this podcast right here, but he is not going to be what they need in terms of getting a running game and getting some pressure off Alex Smith. You're going to see him on, I think, probably second and long, then maybe a third and short to just kind of try to eat up some yards. But he's not going to be the three down back that he was in Minnesota by any stretch.
You know, I'm interested to see if he even makes the team, because as I understand the terms of his contract, there's no guarantee that he makes the 53 man. So he could even not do well in the preseason games, and they could decide to part ways. He could not perform in practice like they hope he will, and they could choose to go their separate ways. That's my understanding of the deal, at least the way Michael Lombardi was talking about it earlier today on the Ringer NFL show.
Okay. I'm a little disappointed that they're not willing to invest in Chris Thompson. I mean, again, he's not a three down back for every series out there. No running back today is, but it's still disappointing that Chris Thompson's with such a great year last year. It was really the pivot when the Redskins seasons, or not seasons, but when the season's wheels came off. It was really when Chris Thompson got hurt there around Thanksgiving and broke his leg that was the end. And I'm very disappointed that they are changing their tune so quickly on him.
I mean, you're so right, though. The modern offense is not based on the three down back, because we don't have the old school offenses that just can run it up the gut and run it right down other teams' throats. Now we have offenses like Sean McVay's, which thrives with a Todd Gurley type. And I would say that Chris Thompson's best comp, I mean, Todd Gurley is sort of another level entirely, but his best comp as far as another player who plays with his style and can be a pass catcher out of the backfield, I think would be someone like Gurley. And obviously you saw what Los Angeles did with Gurley last year and what people expect them to do again this year. And I think it makes sense that Washington could, if they really wanted to, invest in Thompson the same way. Because you're right, he's a difference maker on the field. And when he went down with injury last year, that was pretty much the death knell of the Redskins season.
Yeah, very much. No, I was going to say, you wonder if a guy like Barry Sanders here in 2018 could do what we saw him do at this point, 25, 30 years
ago, great question.
How dominant he was, and offenses just aren't built the same way. And I think
I think defensive ends are a lot quicker too, and strong linebackers move a lot faster and plug gaps in coverage much more quickly than they used to. So yeah, I think schemes adjust, and that's why we have different eras in football like that.
It's why those fans of, say, the Naval Academy, Air Force, West Point, Georgia Tech, why these option offenses are so good in college and just don't translate to the NFL. The linebackers have gotten too fast.
Exactly.
Because the lines have gotten too athletic. It's very interesting.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, should we pivot to NFC, AFC South stuff?
Let's Let's do it, man. I got my running back pontification out of the way, so we might as well get to it.
Love it. Well, let's start with AFC South. And I want to do this the same way we've done our NFC AFC North preview. That is, we'll identify each team and a storyline for the team and an X factor for the team. And then we'll talk about whether or not we think, or we'll talk about who or which team we think will eventually win the division.
Can I, before we start, can I alibi something? I realized I said when we did our AFC and NFC North projections, for anyone out there listening, I was well aware of it within about an hour after we recorded that show and didn't get a chance to fix it. Isaiah Crowell, who I said would be the difference maker in Cleveland, is obviously not in Cleveland anymore, traded in March. Walked away in March to the Jets, and I realized that the Cleveland running back situation is still very much fluid based on their draft, but I do want to clean up. I know I said Isaiah Crowell would be a difference maker based on what that Cleveland offense could do. Obviously, Nick Chubb is there, and they've got a lot of different running backs in the mix there, but I realize he's in New York now, and I apologize for the bad data right there, but I had to clean that one up after last week.
how depressed do you think you would be as an NFL athlete to go from the Cleveland Browns to the New York Jets?
It's not great, especially as the Browns, I mean, they can't trend down anymore than they did. The Browns, I think, are trending up a little, and outside of Sam Darnold, I don't think the Jets are trending up at all. So yeah, that hurts. That hurts.
All right, well, let's talk about NFC, AFC South. We'll start with the NFC.
Yeah.
And my pick to win this division, I think it'll be close. I think it'll be down to the Falcons and the Saints, Pete, but I'm going to go with the Saints. What do you think?
I actually disagree with you in that. I like Atlanta, but only by Atlanta having an 11-5 record and New Orleans having a 10-6 record. So I think it's going to be close. What I really like about Atlanta, honestly, is you look at the Calvin Ridley draft pick coming out of Alabama. I think that was huge. I'm not sure that they have the best offensive line in the NFL, but I think they definitely have one of the best. And I think when you pair a great offensive line with a great quarterback head coach combination that they have there, I just really like the direction the Falcons are going. I'm still not convinced the Falcons are ever going to win the big game. But I just like the way that they're clicking on offense. I think the defense might be a little suspect in terms of what we expect versus where they're going. But I'm still just a hair higher on Atlanta than I am on New Orleans. But how do you ever bet against Drew Brees? So maybe I'm an idiot. This is why you guys shouldn't take betting advice from me, even though I live in Vegas. But
no, I mean, I
think Atlanta has the edge.
I think you're right in that Atlanta has a deeper, more complete roster. And I actually also identified as my X factor the dynamic duo of Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones, two of Alabama's best receivers of the last decade.
Yeah.
So putting both of those guys on a roster, I mean, I can't imagine how giddy Matt Ryan is thinking about having Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones on each side.
Yeah, and Mohamed Sanu as his slot receiver.
Right.
I mean, that's
a complete set of weapons. Yeah. And so I totally agree with you that the Falcons could easily come out on top. I like Dan Quinn as a head coach. I like Matt Ryan as a quarterback. I think the storyline for the Falcons is how they won't be denied for a third time, because they obviously lost to the Patriots in heartbreaking fashion a year and a half ago in the Super Bowl. And then last year in the playoffs, of course, lost really what was a pretty narrow game to the Eagles. And the Eagles, of course, went on to blow out the Vikings. So the Falcons had to be watching that Vikings game thinking, wow, we could have totally beaten this Vikings team and made it back to the Super Bowl. So I think the narrative there is, will they be denied a third time? But you're right. The Breeze thing is why I'm picking the Saints, just because Breeze he's 1 year older. He is trying to cement his legacy. He has only one ring, right? I'm getting that right. I think Breeze only has one ring.
Yes, against the Colts in 09, right?
Right, I think so. I'll fact check that in just a second. But I mean, you can't really bet against Drew Breeze at this point in his career. I think he's a really experienced quarterback. I think the Saints front office has done not a ton, but enough this offseason to build up the team around Breeze. I think for me, the X factor with the Saints is going to be not Drew Breeze, because we know he's going to be great, but actually it's Alvin Kamara. Can Kamara come back and replicate his 2017 campaign again this year? Because he looked like the steal of the draft, right? The fourth round pick who just ended up destroying opposing defenses. looking like a you know, multi-use utility knife who can be a pass catcher and who can run it up the gut and who can do everything. But can he sustain that? And if he can, I think he's going to open up a lot of options in the passing game for Drew Brees. If he's not, it's going to be that much harder for Brees. So I think Kamara is the X factor there. What would you say about that?
I agree. He's absolutely the X factor. I think the Shane Vereen pickup is going to be interesting. We obviously saw what he did in New England a couple years ago. I think that could help take a little more pressure off Drew Brees. I think the New Orleans defense is what could make this more interesting, though, if I'm being completely honest, where I think the trade for Marcus Davenport at defensive end, I think, was big. I think Cameron Jordan on defense is probably poised for a big season. What really puts Atlanta one game ahead in my mind over New Orleans, however, is the fact that Atlanta is playing their first seven games, five of them are home. So I see Atlanta being able to kind of get out in front early on and kind of establish a lead. But I totally agree. The Saints have done what they need to do in the offseason, and the Saints year in, year out, especially under Drew Brees, are always competitive. So I it's really a toss-up, but I agree with you that they've done what they need to do to build up that team. I think Shane Vereen and Marcus Davenport are actually the two biggest pickups to put them in a good spot. I won't be surprised if the wild card team comes out of the NFC South, though. I really think the loser of this 1-2 matchup is got to be the favorite for the wild card.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I think we're in agreement then that the Panthers and the Bucks are not really in it, but I am intrigued by some of the things that the Bucks have done in the offseason, trying to bolster their D-line. They picked up Bo Allen and Vinnie Curry, both former Eagles, both former Super Bowl champs. So trying to bolster their defensive line, taking a cue from the Eagles that the game is won and lost in the trenches. I think for the Bucks, the storyline is Jameis Winston. He is not a great quarterback. He's frustratingly inconsistent if you're a Bucks fan. And then there's this whole nonsense about his light, you know, 3-game slap on the wrist for what ultimately ended up being sexual assault that he had, by the way, lied about and tried to cover the tracks of. So that's sort of laughable from an NFL discipline standpoint. But that whole issue notwithstanding, just based on field performance alone, I don't think Jameis Winston has really earned a right to be a starting quarterback in the league, because primarily of his inconsistency and his ball control. Because Winston's a high ceiling quarterback and he can make some plays that dazzle, but then he'll also turn in these complete doozies where he's throwing 3 and 4 picks in a game, and that's just not what you need your starting quarterback to do. So I think the question for the Bucks is, can Jameis Winston, even with a 3-game suspension this year, turn in a 13-game campaign where he can prove that he's the quarterback that Tampa Bay needs for its future?
Yeah, what I'm reading on the Bucks, and I'm not very good at reading the tea leaves, but they seem to be losing faith on Jameis Winston very quickly.
Yeah, I totally agree.
The tools that they're acquiring. And I think this could be a very bad season in Tampa Bay. I mean, I really and truly, looking at their schedule right now, don't see more than 4 or 5 wins on this schedule that I think they can achieve. So I think this is probably the last year that Jameis is guaranteed to be the starter. You're absolutely right about his pathetic 3-game suspension. And the fact that we've seen some quarterbacks in the NFL who don't appear to be good people, but at least kind of figure out how to play the game and at least maintain somewhat of an image. And Jameis Winston is absolutely trending in the wrong direction. And I think if you're the Tampa Bay ownership, no matter how good of an athlete you think he is, and I think going back to his time at Florida State, he demonstrated he is a fantastic athlete. He's not a guy, based on the way that he's handling himself, both on and off the field, that you can really build a team around. So I think while he was supposed to be the franchise quarterback, I think he's become the bridge, and I would expect to see the top 2 or 3 quarterbacks in the draft here in 2019 be guys the Bucks are targeting, because they're going to have a top 5 pick in 2019, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's at least pretty close, if not top 5, pretty close to it, because I too am looking at the schedule. Game 1 at New Orleans, that's going to be a loss. Game 2 home versus the Eagles, that's probably going to be a loss. Week 3 versus the Steelers, loss. Maybe they could eke one out against the Bears, but it's on the road. And then they're on the road in Atlanta. They play Cleveland at home. They go to Cincinnati. They can probably squeak out a win there. Go to Carolina. They play Washington at home. They can probably win that one. Sorry, Pete. Go to the Purple. Giants. I mean, yeah, they do have a really tough schedule, and I think they have tough sledding ahead. So yeah, them having a top five pick, definitely something that I would bet on.
Yeah. So what do you think about Carolina? Yeah. The third offensive coordinator in 3 years here in Carolina. I like Norv Turner, but three offensive coordinators in 3 years with an offense that's lost so many pieces. What's your projection on them right now?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really hard to project because of the offensive coordinator lack of continuity. And there's, of course, the storyline, I think, every year in Carolina comes down to Cam Newton, and that's sort of what people make the storyline at the beginning of every year. But I really am a Cam Newton fan. I like the way he plays the game. I think that his deep ball accuracy is lacking in some cases. I think that he has taken a beating because of the way he leads with his body and he escapes the pocket. And he's so big, he plays like a tight end, but a quarterback just can't absorb hits like a tight end. So I think he's sort of declined a little bit in the past couple of years, but the X factor here for the Panthers, I think, is, I guess there's two parts. You already mentioned one. How much continuity can they have with their offensive coordinator, with all these pieces that they've lost in recent years? For example, Mike Wallace to the Eagles in the offseason this year. Mike Wallace was their speediest receiver. So what can they do with that? And then can the O-line protect Newton and be able to give the run game and the passing game, really, any semblance of a shot? They allowed 161 pressures last year, which is not good, not a good mark for an offensive line. And you can't point fingers at a quarterback when his O-line is not giving him any time to do anything. So I am very hesitant to place any blame on Cam Newton. I would look more at the O-line. What will the coaching staff be able to cook up to help that O-line? I don't think they've made many. I'll have to double check this. I don't think they've made many acquisitions to bolster the O-line, so they're largely keeping the same personnel. But what can they do differently just in terms of game prep and scheming to alleviate some of that pressure?
I think honestly it's a bad O-line. I don't think it's an O-line that in any way, shape, or form can keep up with New Orleans or Atlanta this year, and really the fact that they have to play four games between those two teams, I think they're going to be lucky to go 1-3 in those four games. Their defense is going to be what keeps them competitive this year. I think they have a very good front seven. Lou Pequey, obviously, every year, if he can stay healthy, is a difference maker. But at the end of the day, in the NFL, a good front seven does not equal even winning your division, let alone making the playoffs. So I'm not very high on the Panthers this year. I think 8-8 is probably an aggressive pick for them. I think 7-9 is probably more realistic. I think it's going to be a rough year in Carolina. But who knows? Norv Turner has been known to turn around an offense or two. You look at what he did in Minnesota, especially. He's a good offensive coordinator. So I could very well be surprised.
Yeah, I agree. And I will correct myself. They made one offseason pickup on the line. That's Jeremiah Sirles, Sirles. I'm actually not familiar with this player. He was a Viking last year, though. I mean, they added someone who can play an offensive line position, but he's not a huge difference maker on the line. So really, he just sort of adds competition and depth. But that's all they've done there. So I think we'll see if their O-line can withstand it. The reality is offensive linemen are in short supply, and when they're really good, they can demand really big paydays. So I don't necessarily fault Carolina for not doing that. It might just be the reality of the market for offensive linemen at positions of need, but the reality is they don't have many guys there to protect Cam. So the NFC South. Any other thoughts on that, Pete?
No, I think we covered it.
All right, well, let's go to the AFC South. We'll start here with let's start with the Colts. Lots of exciting stuff going on in Indianapolis, and I know you've got a soft spot in your heart for Indy, given where some of your extended family is from. So.
Absolutely. Old Neckbeard doesn't have his neck beard anymore with Andrew Luck cleaning himself up a little this offseason. So
it's weird, right?
It's weird. Andrew Luck.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so what do you think about the Colts? What's in store for them? They have the return of Andrew Luck, who did not dazzle in his first preseason showing a few nights ago. They have coaching them now after Josh McDaniels did the abrupt 180 and walked out of their head coaching vacancy. They now have Frank Reich, who was the offensive coordinator for the Eagles during their Super Bowl run. So maybe some ingredients there for success, but what do you think?
I think the Colts are going to be competitive this year. I don't think they're going to win the division, unfortunately. It's just been so long since we've truly seen Andy at his potential that it's really hard to evaluate this team. It's really hard to evaluate Andrew Luck. I think Rick is going to do some really good things. I think because he's an offensive-minded guy. And Chuck Pagano, who I think we all can agree was a good dude, was not an offensive-minded coach. And we saw Andrew Luck especially regress on this. We never saw a running game in Indianapolis. Aside from T.Y. Hilton, we didn't really see any downfield threats. We saw Andrew Luck holding onto the ball way too long. So overall, I am optimistic that Andrew Luck is going to kind of continue moving forward. I mean, the last time he was healthy, don't forget this team went 11-5 in a very soft AFC South, which obviously the division is much more competitive now than it was 3 years ago. But this team was 11-5 when Andrew Luck was healthy. So I don't think we can undervalue that despite his regression. What worries me about the Colts is the fact that their defensive line is so mediocre. And I don't see this defense really making the strides they need in order to be competitive this year. I think they've got some young secondary, which means you've got a high potential to get burned downfield and a high potential to just get outmatched against some veteran receivers in the league. But overall, it's that defensive line that worries me. What does make me optimistic about the Colts, however, is you look at the month of November, and they're in Indianapolis for almost the entire month of November. But they've got a bye week the first week of November, then they take Jacksonville at home, Tennessee at home, and then Miami at home, which granted, Jacksonville and Tennessee are going to be two competitive games. But at the end of the day, playing indoors in your home stadium in November is more of an equalizer than a lot of things. Obviously, it doesn't make up for talent, but I think it could help a team if they can be kind of 500 through September and October as Andrew Luck gets his feet under him and the defense holds on. That could be an easy 2-1 run, I think, and that could maybe propel them into a wild card race in the AFC. How about you?
Yeah, I think I don't quite share your optimism. I mean, I'm optimistic for the future of the Colts franchise. I'm less optimistic for their 2018 season. I just see Andrew Luck as a guy who's really rusty in football. I think it'll take at least a month to shake off some of that rust. So he'll get through 3 or 4 games, and then maybe we'll see him sort of returning to form. I think we'll see a similar amount of time for the offense to sort of dial in. And even when the offense does dial in, if and when that happens, really, I think they're lacking really big playmakers to give them an edge. And at the same time, they're going to be playing against the Jaguars twice. The Jaguars have a really good defensive line and have some disruptive playmakers who can make life very difficult for opposing quarterbacks. They're, of course, going against the Texans, and I'm concerned about the Colts' defense as well. And I think the Texans have the pieces of a very dynamic offense, and that doesn't pair well. I just think that the Colts will find themselves with a losing record. Perhaps not at the bottom of this division, but I think behind both the Texans and the Jags. And I think that will pretty much mean that they're done for the season at that point. So I think this is not the year for the Colts, but I think the future is bright because I think Luck is a fantastic quarterback, or at least has the capacity to be that. I think Reich is a great coach. I'm biased as an Eagles guy, but look, he delivered a Super Bowl to Philadelphia. So, and I think he has something that Pagano did not. I mean, you said Pagano was a great guy. He was. He was a great guy in the same way that, like, I'm sure Hugh Jackson's a great guy. You know, they're nice people. I'm sure they'd be fun to have a beer with, but they are not good at winning football games. And it turns out, as a coach, you need to be good at winning football games. And Reich has put together a good resume of doing that, albeit not as a head coach, but he still has the resume there. And he seems to have the sort of emotional intelligence that guys like Pagano were appreciated for. And so I think Reich has all the tools that he needs to come into an organization like the Colts that is so used to losing for so long and rebuild it back into what it was in the Manning era. So I'm excited to see what's in the future. I just don't think this year is going to be a very pretty one for Indianapolis.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. It's that culture, I think you're right, needs more work than anything else. They need to get back to their winning ways. Yeah. I think the fact that the AFC South has gotten so competitive has gotten into the Colts' heads more than anyone else.
Yeah, I agree. I want to talk Texans, Jags, but real quick, let's just sort of get the Titans out there as well before we do that. Okay. Because, I mean, I sort of already alluded to this, but I think this is a two-horse race for the South here, the Texans, Jags. But I do think the Titans are interesting. For a couple of reasons. One, of course, new head coach, right? Mike Vrabel. And he's not really your traditional coaching candidate who spent his whole career coming up in coaching systems. He's a, an ex-player who sees the game through a player's eyes. And there certainly are examples of successful coaches who have done that, but I'm just saying it's not the normal pedigree of an NFL head coach. So I'm intrigued to see how he runs things there. I think the X factor, though, for the Titans is what Matt LaFleur is going to be able to do, because he's been one of the most RPO play action leading minds in the league for years, did a lot of RPO, I think most in the league, at least close to it, last year in Los Angeles. And he's probably going to bring that sort of stuff into Tennessee. And ordinarily, I wouldn't be excited about that. I mean, if he was coming in to install that playbook with, I don't know, Alex Smith or Josh McCown or Case Keenum, I wouldn't be as excited about it. But he's coming into it with Mariota. And I think the thing that has prevented Mariota from having success at the NFL level is that he's not been given not been paired with an offensive coordinator who can scheme to his strength. And I see that as something that Matt LaFleur can do. And I think that'll be the really interesting thing to watch in Tennessee. Will LaFleur be able to come up with this RPO play action type stuff for Mariota that takes advantage of his ability to be outside the pocket, to be mobile, to throw on the run, things like that, rather than just being a pocket passer? Because when Mariota is a pocket passer, his accuracy goes down. You see him be less efficient. So if LaFleur can play to his strengths, I think we could see something different come out of Tennessee. And that's kind of an exciting idea for me. Again, maybe like the Colts, this is not their year. But I think they have the pieces in place here with Vrabel and LaFleur to start building something better.
Yeah, I agree that the future is brighter than the present in Tennessee. I think the Deion Lewis pickup really helps them. I think they have a brutal second half of the schedule that could really start to just wear this team down so much. But I kind of think this is the year for Delanie Walker. I really don't have any empirical evidence to back that up, but I think he has been on the cusp of being one of the at least second-tier tight ends, if not top-tier in the NFL tight ends. And I think exactly as you're saying, with that RPO and the fact that Mariota might be a little more comfortable in the pocket than he's been before, I would expect to see a guy like Delanie Walker really start stepping up. And if he does, I think that could be really the X factor for the Titans more than anything else. But I agree with your overall point. This probably isn't their year, but give it two or three more years and they could very well be at the top of this division.
Yeah. Well, let's talk Jags real quick. Top of the division last year, of course. So speaking of top of the division, headlined by their quarterback, Blake Bortles, coming back for another year. And all of the Blake Bortles haters are finding plenty of reasons to hate him. And all of the Blake Bortles lovers, which is basically Jaguars fans, are saying, hey, look, he brought us to an AFC championship. And at the end of the day, they're right. I would just point to the fact that Jacksonville has found great success in the defensive line. I think the lesson of the 2017-2018 NFL season, last season, is that games rise and fall on the strengths of the lines, in particular the defensive line. Think back to Brandon Graham's strip sack of Tom Brady with 2 minutes and 16 seconds left in the Super Bowl. It was the defensive line that made the difference in that game. And I think that's been the storyline for the Jags as well. So the story of the Jags is not Blake Bortles being a magnificent quarterback a la Aaron Rodgers. The story of the Jags is Blake Bortles being an acceptable quarterback and the defensive line creating enough opportunities and stuffing opponents' attempts enough to let the Jags succeed. And so I think for the Jags, the storyline for them is about redemption. They threw the game away to the Patriots in the AFC Championship by kneeling out the final 30 seconds of the clock in the first half when they could have been aggressive and gone for it.
Yep.
And that right there may have been the difference between a Jaguars Super Bowl appearance and them going home disgraced from the AFC Championship.
Yep.
And I think the X factor here is whether or not the, quote, Saxonville, end quote, defense can repeat. Will they be able to maintain their pattern of stuffing opposing quarterbacks? And will the confident secondary, led by A.J. Bouye and Jalen Ramsey, who has been a pretty outspoken guy, hilariously, through camp this year, will they be able to maintain? I'm bullish on their chances to do that, so I actually think they will. And for that reason, Pete, my pick for the division, contra our dear friend of the pod and takes of the game host friend, Taylor Young, it'll be the Jaguars, not the Texans, who win the division. What do you think?
Wow. I think Taylor's going to be a better friend to me in the next week than he will be to you.
Probably so, probably.
The Texans is the top dog. And here's where I disagree with you. I think all your points, for the most part, were right on par. But I think the biggest difference maker for me is I'm looking at the Jags this year. I think the defense is going to be solid. But remember, they were a 10-6 team last year with both Andrew Luck and Deshaun Watson out. There's no way they're going 4-0 against those two teams this year. So in the division, I think at best against those other two teams, I think they'll be pretty competitive against Tennessee. I think best case, they have to plan on the 3-1 in the division against the Colts and the Texans. And then I look at the rest of their schedule, and it's kind of tough. But I think the offense just took too many steps back in order to maintain what they did. Where we talked about the defense carried them last year, but the offense was still able to have a good downfield threat as well as a good running game. So Blake Bortles always had some options downfield. Alan Hearns is gone. And I just don't see Leonard Fournette having the same caliber season that he did last year. That I think he surprised people a little bit last year. And I think how many carries he had to get, I think he's going to be a little more worn down this year than we saw last year. So I agree the defense led by Jalen Ramsey is going to be great this year, but I don't think it's going to be enough to propel them ahead of the Texans, because I don't even think they're the best defense in the division right now. Because we look at Houston, we have J.J. Watt, we have the Honey Badger, we have just a solid defense working around these guys. And the biggest weakness that I see in Houston is a bad offensive line. But I think the rest of the tools that they have are going to keep them above the Jags, barely, but above the Jags, where I'm looking at probably a 9-7 Jags season and probably a 10-6 Houston season. So I think
I think it is going to be close, just like that. And I was comparing the Texans and Jags schedules. They're actually not identical, but they're fairly similar. They, of course, have the same, have similar division schedules. And then the Texans will play the Eagles. They will play the Browns. The Jaguars will play the Eagles as well. They don't play the Browns, but they do play the Jets, who the Texans will also play. And the Texans also play the Bills, who the Jags play. So pretty similar schedules even outside of the division. And I think that makes it even more of a wash. It's not like one of these schedules is very obviously more difficult or easier than the other. For me, go ahead.
No, after you, my friend.
Well, for me, I was just looking at the Texans. Deshaun Watson's amazing, and I think he's going to be an incredible quarterback. So I don't have concerns about the offense there. I think Bill O'Brien knows how to coach a quarterback as well. So I have no concerns about the Bill O'Brien, Deshaun Watson synergy. Where I think the Texans could fall apart is their defense and their defensive line. I mean, will J.J. Watt be able to be the J.J. Watt that he once was? He is the only player in NFL history with two 20-plus sack seasons. And he just has not been the same player for the last 2 years because he's not able to stay on the field. First with back problems 2 years ago, and then last season with the broken knee issue. So will he be able to make a long return to the field, and will he be able to be the impact player that he once was? I think really the Texans defense is going to hinge on him. I already talked about my defensive line philosophy. It's all about the defensive line. And when you have a player like J.J. Watt as your defensive end, you're going to be in good shape, as long as he's in good shape. And if he's not, you're not. So I have concerns for the Texans on that. I think if J.J. Watt plays 3 or 4 games this season, that could be all the edge the Jaguars need to take the division crown.
Sure. Those those are fair. What's interesting to me that Houston is actually more so on Deshaun Watson than it is on J.J. Watt, where, I mean, if J.J. Watt's healthy, they're fine. If he's not healthy, they're in trouble. I think Deshaun Watson is not necessarily going to take a step back this year, but I don't think he's going to blow the doors off this league like he did last year, where I think defenses are going to have a little more tape on him. They're going to understand a little more how to contain him on either sides of the offensive and defensive lines. I think they're going to get a little better at that. I expect to see more QB spies on him than normal, where he's really going to have to beat guys with his arms instead of his legs, which is, I thought it was the combination of the two last year that really made him so dangerous. But I think defenses are going to figure out how to contain him a little more and force him to throw downfield, not even in the slants over the middle where he made a little money last year. I think it's going to be true downfield throws, which I watched a lot of him in college, and he is a fantastic quarterback. But this is a different level, and I expect him to be very good, but not the best quarterback in the NFL this year. And I know that's not the comparison you were making. I don't think either of us are making that case. But I think they're going to shut him down a little more this year than they have in the past. And that's where I see potentially Houston having some problems, is just not having the dynamic playmaking out of Deshaun that they had last year before he got injured that they're really hanging their hat on.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, like I said, I do think Deshaun Watson's an amazing quarterback. I'd be very, very optimistic if I were a Texans fan. But you're right. There's going to be some natural regression to the mean, and it's not even because he's taking a step back. It's just because of all the things you mentioned. They're going to have more tape on him. Just mathematically, with a larger sample size, there's more likely to be a regression to the mean. So this is not four games we're talking about. We're talking about potentially a full season of 16 games. And so he's not going to be able to sustain what we saw at the beginning. I mean, it's not very, but it's common for rookie quarterbacks to come in, and because there's no tape, there's no experience with opposing defenses against that quarterback, they do well. I mean, just look at Trevor Siemian in Denver a couple years ago. Came in and it was like, it was Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, and Trevor Siemian? What? Look at what happened to Trevor Siemian after that. So I'm not saying Deshaun Watson is destined for that. I think Deshaun Watson is more in the like Carson Wentz category. But, you know, Carson Wentz came back to earth a little bit, too, after his first four games. And I expect the same to happen to Deshaun Watson. So that's a good point.
Do you like the Jags and the Saints to win the South?
I do. Yep, Jags and Saints.
The Texans and the Falcons to win the South. So this can be fun for us this year.
It could, indeed. And I'm very sorry that Taylor Young could not join us here. I texted him see if he wanted to come on. He's otherwise indisposed, but maybe when we talk about when we do our next NFL preview, maybe I'll have him come on and he can yell at us about the Texans a little bit and tell us why we're wrong and why the Texans are going 16-0 this year. So,
dude, I welcome that debate, Taylor. If you're listening, man, I want you to come on here and yell at us a little. You and I were a little more restrained than we normally are tonight. I don't know what it is. Like we didn't disagree as much as we normally did.
No, maybe this is just a low energy pod. I don't know. We'll have to bring the heat next time. I'll email you some hot takes.
Wipe away the tears over the mat. Yeah, please do.
All right, man. Well, you have a great rest of your trip in DC. Just another call out to the celebrities listening. Pete's gonna be in the BWI airport tomorrow evening, so I'll come by, say hi, and until next time, Pete, travel safely. Have a great flight. Love those transcontinental airplane rides. We're going on one later this week with our toddlers, and you have toddlers.
Wow,
they're the
luck,
best.
Man.
They're the best kind of airplane rides.
Oh yeah, they're always pretty upbeat. They never complain.
No,
it's good. It's good.
Always a great attitude. Never hungry. Never needing basic sustenance or anything like that. So
no, very patient. I'm flying on Southwest tomorrow night, and I just checked into my flight before we jumped on the horn here, and I'm C-59.
C so for center seat. How did you get C-59 when you checked in a day before? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, less than an hour after it opened up.
Oh, my goodness.
If you are on a Southwest flight tomorrow night out of BWI, just be aware, I might be sitting next to you and really grumpy.
C for really center grumpy. Seat. Yeah, I love that. I love that seating plan for Southwest. It's always wonderful. Yeah. Nothing makes you feel human like just trying to log on as fast as possible and reserving your seat. Well, Pete, we'll end it there. We'll get some rest so you can not be as grumpy for your center seat experience tomorrow. To our listeners, thanks for tuning in to the AFC NFC South preview. I think next time we'll go. Should we go west, Pete? AFC NFC West.
Perfect. Let's do it, and then we'll finish out in 2 weeks with our beloved East.
All right. Sounds good. We've also got a college football preview coming your way. We still have to
nail
that one down, but it will happen. It will get done before kickoff weekend. So you can look forward to seeing that in your feed as well. You can reach out to us at Third String Pod, at Zach Crippen, at Pete_LeCleed. Love to hear your thoughts. Leave us a rating or review on iTunes. Let us know what you think of the podcast, what we can do better. And until next time, thanks for listening to Third String Podcast.